From jet engines to space rockets, telephones to computers, the world has seen spectacular change in the last 100 years, and the pace of progress is getting faster and faster. From electric cars to the metaverse, drone deliveries to climate solutions and genetic sequencing, we're investing in the companies that are not just changing the world today, but are also shaping the future. The Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Invest in progress. Capital at risk.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to The Wealth Show. I'm Zach, a senior reporter at Wealth Manager. I'm joined today by fellow reporter Sophie Downs, and today we're talking about the progress of the FCA's sustainable disclosure requirements. Joining us today is Molly Thornton, Senior Investment Manager at Parmenion. Molly, thank you so much for coming on. How are you?
Oh, great. Yeah, thanks for having me. Really nice to be here.
So going straight into it, I mean, we'd like to talk about the process. And, you know, we've heard a lot about the application process. You know, in recent months, we've seen more and more firms being granted SDR labels. I wanted to ask you how you think the regulator has handled this process. And, you know, do you think we'll be seeing many more firms acquiring labels, or a bit of a slowdown?
Yeah, so yeah, the labels, I think, were announced last November, and then fund managers were able to start using them from the end of July, subject to meeting, you know, the requirements. Speaking to fund managers, which we do day in, day out, I think it's been a bit of a journey. So at the start, you know, some of the leading managers in this space were really thinking they'd be early adopters. And, you know, often they're running their funds in exactly the same way. They're not planning to change anything. So it was kind of, you know, quick up-to-date documentation and then user label. Sounds like it's been more of a kind of process of education with the FCA, working together with, you know, different, you know, the fund managers, also some of the people on the groups like the disclosure and labeling group. So yeah, I think it's been, sounds like there's been a lot of teething problems, but I think the light of at the end of the tunnel is coming now. So we're aware of that, you know, there's well over 10 funds already with labels, which is fantastic. I'm aware that there's over 100 funds in the process. So that means they're, you know, maybe on their first, second, third iteration of putting in a submission to the FCA. But so hopefully, yeah, we're, you know, almost every day now we're seeing announcements of more funds getting labels. There has been the extension. So initially it was going to be by the 2nd of December. For the funds that use sustainability or impact in their name, if they're still in the process, they've been granted an extra 4 months now. So they're not going to have to rename and then, you know, get the label and name back again. They can kind of stay in that process and then count till April to wrap that up. So yeah, I think over the next 4 months or so, we should see, you know, hopefully all those 100 funds in the process coming through the other side.
It is a notoriously tough process. And obviously this is something the FCA says it's intentional. You know, you want these funds doing what they say they do, and you want the best of the best. Mm. I mean, you've been talking with fund managers and advisors. What is the industry sentiment towards this? You know, knowing it's difficult, do you think there's still appetite for it? And how are people feeling at the moment?
I think there's definitely appetite for it. I think personally, I think I'm really excited about it. I think it definitely helps separate the wheat from the chaff. You know, there's some really good funds out there which we use in our solutions, and we think they're real leaders in sustainability. And I kind of get annoyed when we all get tarred with the same ESG brush. Yeah. You know, some other fund that's just looking at ESG risk mitigation and avoiding a bit of tobacco or coal or whatever, that's not the same thing. So I think it's going to be positive from our perspective, and more importantly for clients. I think the advisors I speak to who, you know, because we've got a solution that's been going 12 years, we've got a really good cohort of advisors we work with. You know, many of them have been doing this for a long time. And they're broadly positive. I think they see the value that, you know, for their clients to have labelled funds or eventually labelled solutions, that will really help improve confidence. But obviously, we're waiting to see how that pans out, because the solutions haven't been brought into the regime yet. We don't know what the ultimate fund universe is going to look like.
Yeah,
but there is broad positivity. But yeah, to your point, Sophie, I think the process has been quite painful for some. And I think maybe some of the small fund houses probably find it more difficult just from a resource perspective. And you hear about the kind of legal fees racking up and stuff like that, which isn't the intention of obviously what the FCA is trying to do. But yeah, hopefully, you know, as more funds come through, there's kind of more precedence and it becomes clearer what is required. So that should help.
Yeah. And of course, we're seeing, you know, it took us a while with some teething issues to see funds getting granted labels. But we've also seen, you know, firms rejecting the approach of the FCA and the labels as well. I'm thinking of Stuart Investors, which of course were a pioneer in sustainability, and Vanguard also said the same, that they wouldn't apply for a label. You know, why do you think firms are taking this stance? And do you expect this to continue?
I think what I would say is from, you know, all the fund managers we use, including Stuart, have really engaged in the process. I think they understand what the FCA is trying to do. You know, individual people really care about sustainability. You probably saw, I think the latest FCA survey was a couple of years ago, but they surveyed about 15,000 people and well over 70% care about the environment. They want their companies in their portfolios to be doing more than just making a profit. But we have got a problem with greenwash and trust in the industry. So there is, everyone recognises the need for this. And, you know, Stuart and others I know have been engaging with the FCA to understand, you know, the labelling and stuff. I mean, I can't really comment on them, but I think the majority are engaging with it and looking to use labels. Maybe they will in future, I don't know. But I understand that it's a difficult process. So, yeah.
Yeah. And just on the point about labels and sort of slightly linking to your point earlier about separating the wheat from the chaff. I wondered your thoughts, you know, whether you think they go far enough to combat greenwashing. Of course, you know, there's that 70% asset threshold. Do you think that's high enough?
I think it depends on the manager's process. And I think the FCA has made it deliberately principles-based. You'll hear that a lot, rather than the kind of very prescriptive SFDR. And I think SFDR might learn from what's happening here. I think there's always going to be leeway. And I think, you know, we'll have to see ultimately what the, you know, when the managers start coming through with their KPIs, you know, you'd hope they won't just hit the minimum 70.1%. But there could be cases where they need to hold a bit of cash for liquidity management and things like that, that won't necessarily. So, you know, maybe that's up to 5%. And then they're still at 95. So I think it'll depend. But I'm pleased that there's a bit of flexibility and kind of broad principles in the process rather than it being really strict, I think. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And while we've got, you know, these big names dropping out entirely or saying, you know, that, you know, we're not going to go for SDR, we don't feel like it's entirely necessary right now. You also have firms who are saying, okay, we won't go for the label right now. Maybe we'll do that in the future. Right now, we'll just kind of change our names in order to fit with the naming and marketing rules. What is the advantage to that? Is there then an issue perhaps that, you know, they might be left behind or there won't be enough firms going for SDR?
I guess the important thing is that SDR is a really high standard and firms aren't confident that they can meet that. I'm glad that they're holding back. Yeah. And again, yeah. I think we saw when SFDR came in, there was a rush of funds going for Article 8 and 9.
Yeah.
And then ultimately some of them got downgraded, which I think is just really confusing for, you know, end clients and not great for trust either. So I think it's right that people are being cautious about this. I think all the, you know, the leading fund managers we speak to, the ones in our solutions are, most of them are going for a label. There's a few that aren't because they're offshore, for example, so we don't know when they'll get brought in. But yeah, I think that's kind of healthy that people are kind of waiting to see maybe. And don't forget that even if they don't have the label, if they're using any sort of ESG related terms in their marketing, they've got to do the disclosures. So that's going to be a really positive step. We'll have that consumer facing disclosure. They'll have to be really clear about kind of how they're managing their fund and how it's, you know, what the ESG credentials are, which I think will improve standards across the board as well.
And you mentioned earlier, you know, that, you know, smaller firms potentially are finding this more difficult because of a simple matter of resource and as well,
yeah.
You know, legal fees potentially as well. Do you think there could be more done to, you know, accommodate them and make this process easier? Because obviously, you know, when the FCA have a difficult job of trying to make sure that firms across the board, they encourage sustainability across the board, not just for larger firms who can afford it.
Well, I think the FCA is working really hard and doing as much as I can from what I hear. I mean, for each, you know, all these funds going for a label, some of them, it might be the second or third or even fourth time they're going for it. So there's people at the FCA kind of reviewing all of that and having, you know, question and answer and stuff. So it's always going to be difficult when new regulation comes in. Yeah. But I mean, some of the smaller firms, I guess if they are boutiques and sustainability is all they do, I mean, look at Web, they were first out of the gate. They're a small firm. So I don't think it's necessarily a disadvantage. But yeah, I think it just depends on kind of, you know, where they've got to. And as more funds come through, this will all be public, so they'll be able to learn from each other.
Mm-hmm. And obviously this is an ongoing process. You know, we've seen extensions. What's still up in the air? What things are we still kind of waiting on for clarity? I know you mentioned offshore funds.
Yeah, that's a big one. So I think I understand that offshore funds fall under the HM Treasury, so rather than the FCA. So that they will have to lead on the consultation on that about bringing those in. And I think that's been pushed back to next year. So that's a big one. And yeah, Parmenia has been quite active. We responded to the couple of consultations by the FCA. So I'm sure we'll be looking closely at what's happening on offshore funds. I think linked to that as well, a lot of passives are offshore. Right. And we've got a passive ESG solution, and those providers are offshore. So they're obviously doing a lot of work behind the scenes, but we don't know yet where they'll land and how they'll fit into this regime. So that's kind of a big question. And then from a kind of portfolio management perspective, there was the consultation that closed in June because for the funds, SDR has been pushed back. That's now been pushed back. So the FCA are due to tell us what we need to do at a solution level in Q2 next year. And then we'll be able to start planning more for that. Because we've got a range of 4 active solutions in this space and a passive. So we need to be clear what disclosures we need to do and whether we'll be able to get a label for any of those. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And, in terms of the end client, we often hear about, some clients are sort of more sort of open about wanting a sustainable portfolio. Some clients don't really mind that much. For some, it's more of a, sort of in an ideal scenario. Do you think, and should people be providing, more information to end clients about, obviously you don't want to make it too granular, you don't want to bore people to death about SDR and labels and so on and so forth. But do you think this kind of something that's had this impact on the industry should be communicated more to clients? Or do you think there's appetite for that?
Definitely. So the feedback we get from our advisors as well is that their clients want kind of the stories. They want to know some of the underlying companies and, that ESG data. So that's something we've been doing in our improving our reporting. And we use Sustainalytics data so we can show different aspects of our portfolios. And obviously with the consumer facing disclosures, that will kind of help make sure it's jargon free, hopefully, and easy to understand, which is a real challenge in this space. I think the whole, one of the key aims for SDR is, protecting from greenwash, but also increasing transparency and improving competition. And on the transparency piece, I think, it's all about evidence. The FCA wants these funds to have clear objectives and then actual KPIs to sort of measure the outcomes in a robust way. So, I think that's exactly right, that people want more data for their end clients.
We had Chris Wellson on the podcast a few weeks ago, who, among other things, is a member of a cooperative that's fighting greenwashing through research, essentially, and through researching people's ESG credentials and what's actually in the portfolio, et cetera, et cetera. Do you find that, first of all, have you found any instances just across the industry of this kind of greenwashing and a practice going on? And do you think that fund managers on the whole are equipped to internally sort of, have these open discussions and improve sustainability?
I think from our findings, it's generally quite positive in that we have independent ways that we look to assess funds. So obviously a lot of the data comes from the manager, but we use Morningstar and Sustainalytics data. So one thing we'll do for all funds is look at all the holdings, which is quite instructive in itself, just see what makes it into the portfolio. But also through Sustainalytics, you can look at things like the carbon footprint, or you can look at the product involvement of those holdings. So, if it flags, if it's got any exposure to nuclear or animal testing or whatever. And that can prompt some really interesting conversations with managers. Sometimes they say, well, they don't agree with the data, or sometimes it's something like, a bond manager, it might flag as having nuclear and they say they avoid it, but it's actually, they're not investing in the main debt issuance, they're issuing in a green bond. So it's, but it just gives us extra kind of, it makes them know that we're watching, I guess, what they're doing. Yeah. And it can prompt some interesting conversations. And sometimes, there's grey areas. Like if I think about big banks in portfolios, people have diverse views on that, don't they? And some banks are better than others. Some are still funding a lot of fossil fuels, but then some are doing lots more on green financing. So you might see a name and question it. And then, the manager might make a good case for why that bank's improving and what they're doing to engage.
From an ESG perspective, that's social as well.
Exactly,
Banks have links to things people disagree with.
Yeah. And some of them involved in awful scandals like money laundering and stuff like that. So there's a lot of issues. I think having that level of granularity helps us keep on top of our funds and just kind of have more interesting conversations with our managers. And we're really lucky. We also have what we call our ethical oversight committee. So for over 10 years now, we've had a panel of expert consultants. We've got a meeting next week, actually. So we meet them formally every quarter. And they independently assess all the funds in the solution. So that involves them doing independent meetings with fund managers. And they often actually might, they might see the fund manager if it's like a small integrated team, or they might meet someone like the head of RI or the head of stewardship to get like a different angle, and kind of, you know, probe them on things like their voting engagement activity, as well as kind of broader, you know, things on ESG side. Yeah.
In terms of research and credentials, do you think that most large firms use outsourced firms for to help with that independent assessment? Is that like a sort of base requirement, or?
I think a lot of people now are buying in external data like the Sustainalytics or the MSCI. I think certainly among DFMs, we're very rare that we've got this panel of four experts. I think combined they've got like 80 years experience. And they're, you know, so Julia Dreblow is on the committee. A lot of people know her. She's really high profile. She's phenomenal. So we're just so lucky to have those people. And I think that's a nice balance. We've got the quant data, but also we've got their years of experience. And some of these things are quite subjective. So the fact that there's four of them, and then there's myself and three other colleagues who kind of day-to-day run the portfolios, means that most decisions, we've got eight people scrutinising and just kicking the tyres from all angles, really, just to make sure we haven't missed anything. Because yeah, this is quite a quick evolving space. So we want to make sure we keep it on top of key issues and things like that.
What do you think the appetite is now, both from firms and from clients, sort of for sustainable solutions at the moment? You know, we sort of hear a lot about an ESG boom that happened a few years ago, and it was quite big, and now perhaps has receded slightly. What do you think the appetite is at the moment?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because, I mean, if you look at the US, obviously Trump's just got in, it looks a bit bleak. But actually, it's really pleasing that if you look at data just for UK and Europe, it's very much different to that. It's a lot more positive. I mean, you can even see in the UK with the new government, you know, there's been some really positive developments about, you know, overturning the ban on wind farms and having the new GB Energy and kind of pushing forward with, you know, potentially more corporate sustainability reporting and stuff like that. So hopefully we're on the right track now. And then in terms of, you know, we can see feeding through to investment, Morningstar do like a quarterly flows report. And flows were kind of down in the wake of 2022 in this style of investing struggled, but that's actually come back quite strongly this year. So it was $6 billion in Q2, $10 billion in Q3. So it's kind of on an upward trajectory. And we can see that, you know, in the market we're in as well in our solutions. And it's probably helped as well by performance has come back really well this year as well. So, you know, we've gone through the interest rate hiking cycle, which doesn't always favour these style of companies. But now actually we're in a bit more stable, and actually some central banks are cutting interest rates. So that all helps the portfolio performance as well. And yeah, I think SDR will really help as well. I'm hoping that, you know, that makes people have more confidence and get more information as well, so they can understand why a fund is labelling itself as sustainable and what, you know, what the metrics are to support that.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, you know, did you say there's 100 or 200 you're aware of that were in the process?
I think it's just over 100. Yeah. Okay. I mean, obviously there's many more offshore funds as well. And yeah, so I think that there's going to be hopefully a nice universe for us to pick from. And that's all about that point of the SCA trying to drive competition in this space as well. But yeah, it looks like managers are mostly embracing this and getting on board, which will be really good.
And obviously, you know, we don't have a crystal ball and we can't forecast exactly, but do you think Trump coming into power will, with that, we will see a waning in ESG sentiment at all?
Yeah, I mean, it's not ideal. And I think from a media perspective, you know, there's a lot of loud anti-ESG voices at the moment, which isn't that helpful. But I think kind of take some heart from the fact that the Inflation Reduction Act has been a massive boost for, you know, renewables and clean tech in the US. And most of that money is going to kind of Republican states. So, you know, is Trump really going to repeal that and take all that money away and all that job creation, all that economic growth? Possibly not. And I think even under his last presidency, you know, he did take the US out of the Paris Agreement, but actually clean energy really grew at the fastest rate ever during that presidency. And the economics are there, you know, so maybe not with the kind of brand new emerging technology, but wind and solar is the cheapest form of new energy. So he can't, you know, roll all that business realities back at the end of the day. And obviously there are checks and balances in the US. I mean, different states, different companies can choose to, you know, progress with their decarbonisation. And in fact, if they want to sell into Europe, they're going to have to do all the reports and, you know, all that regulation will still apply. So it's probably maybe slower than it would have been, but there's no reason to lose all hope, I don't think.
Still positive.
Yeah.
I think that's a great note to end on. Molly, thank you so much for coming in. You've been listening to The Wealth Show with myself and fellow CityWire reporter Sophie Downes. Today we were joined by Molly Thornton from Parmenion. For any questions, please feel free to email us at wmnews@citywire.co.uk. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
From jet engines to space rockets, telephones to computers, the world has seen spectacular change in the last 100 years, and the pace of progress is getting faster and faster. From electric cars to the metaverse, drone deliveries to climate solutions and genetic sequencing, we're investing in the companies that are not just changing the world today, but are also shaping the future. The Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Invest in progress. Capital at risk.